the fifth of the five deadly offenses of murdering our father, murdering our mother, causing a Buddha to bleed, killing a Bodhisattva or Arhat, and disrupting the unity among the Sangha. Therefore, it would be even worse to choose a certain monk or nun for refuge than not to take refuge at all. Furthermore, we only need to take refuge one time. It does not accomplish anything to take refuge from one person this time and then another person the next time. We may think that we can get more protection if we follow many monks and nuns. However, as the saying goes, a clay idol crossing a river cannot protect himself. Nobody can protect us. Only when we take refuge in the triple jewels of our self-nature can we protect ourselves. Some of those here today may have gone through a taking refuge ceremony. If now those who have done so have a clearer understanding, then they can properly take refuge in the proper jewels by following the principles of awakening, proper thoughts and viewpoints, and purity. The sixth principle of the three conditions is abiding by the precepts, laws, and customs. Of all the precepts, the most important are the basic five precepts. My late teacher, Living Buddha, Master Zhang Jia, once said, "The three refuges and the five precepts are so essential that all Buddhist cultivators need to abide by them every moment." Then he explained further, "It is like a train ticket for you to get from northern Taiwan to southern Taiwan. From the moment you board the train until you exit, you must hold on to that ticket. You must not lose it, for you have to show it when you depart the train. Taking refuge in the Triple Jewels and the first five precepts are as important to you as that train ticket." He further explained that if we part from the Triple Jewels and the precepts, we will lose the teachings and we will no longer be a student of the Buddha. The five precepts are no killing, stealing, committing sexual misconduct, lying, and taking intoxicants. The first four offenses are physical transgressions of the self-nature, whether or not we have taken the five precepts. It is wrong to commit these acts. But for one who has formally taken the five precepts, this will be considered as committing a double violation. However, drinking alcohol and taking intoxicants is different. A person who has not taken this precept is not guilty when drinking. However, a person who has taken the precepts and then drinks will have broken this precept. The purpose of refraining from intoxicants is to prevent us from committing the first four transgressions while under the influence. Therefore, intoxicants in themselves are not wrong. This is an example of why we need to understand the purpose of the Buddha's precept setting, its function, and its benefit. When deciding whether to formally take the five precepts, the essence of all the precepts, we need to ask the Dharma Master to explain exactly what they mean. Only then will we know if and how to abide by them. Merely reading a book on the precepts does not necessarily ensure our commitment to keeping them. Some people have complained that there are too many precepts and that it is too easy to violate them. Thus, they abandon abiding by the precepts. This is why most people prefer reading or listening to talks about the sutras while avoiding those on precepts. We need to remember that precepts guide us in our behavior and are the proper conduct of all Buddhas. If there were no precepts, there would be no Buddhism. If there were no courtesies, there would be no Confucianism. Merely reciting the sutras without practicing the teachings within will result in our not receiving any of their benefits. True learning lies in practice, and the precepts represent the practice of Buddhism. Thus, abiding by the five precepts becomes the standard for our daily lives and the guidelines for us to attain proper enlightenment. When the Buddha was in our world, he was joyful and open-minded, whether taking part in daily life or teaching. And it was this joy and energy that affected people and attracted them to Buddhism. It is not meant to bind us, but to benefit all beings by bringing them joy and happiness. The formation of the precepts was to show us the right way to attain a happy and fulfilling life. A good illustration is my late teacher, Mr. Bingnan Li, who lived a simple and frugal, yet happy life. For decades, he only ate one meal a day. But whenever he was invited out for dinner, he accepted. On several occasions, he invited me to accompany him. Since I had been practicing the precept of not eating dinner for years, I felt very uncomfortable when being invited. Mr. Li simply said to me, "Come with me. Come with me." Later he spoke to me, "With this attachment, you will not be able to help people." Why? Because if you intend to help them, you first must make them happy. Eating this dinner is not violating the precepts, but rather is lifting them. They invited you with good intentions. If you reject their invitation, they will look upon you as being closed to reason. Then they will not only reject Buddhism, but will also tell others that we practitioners are arrogant and look down upon others. He may even urge others to avoid Buddhists. So you could ruin the opportunity of an untold number of people to learn of Buddhism. Furthermore, this will result in the creation of negative karma for you. Therefore, Mr. Lee was not violating the precepts, but was instead simply lifting them, for this meant making others happy, helping them to learn of Buddhism, as well as according with conditions. When we arrived at dinner, the host apologized. "I am very sorry that I did not know that Mr. Lee does not eat dinner." The host was obviously deeply moved that Mr. Lee had accepted his invitation. We can see from this that Buddhism is flexible. However, it would have been entirely different if Mr. Lee, or one who practices this precept, had wanted to eat something in the evening. Many years ago, when I was young, a friend told me a story about himself. It had occurred during the Chinese War of Resistance against the Japanese invasion. After the fall of Nanjing, some Japanese soldiers chased the individual and two of his friends. The three fled to a temple and were saved by an old monk who shaved their heads, gave them monk's clothing to put on, and told them to blend into the large assembly of monks. When the Japanese soldiers arrived at the temple, they could not find the three. They were unable to find them, and thus they soon left. Thus, the three were saved. When the war was over, the friends returned to Nanjing, wishing to repay their thanks to the old monk. They invited him to a lavish banquet. He arrived to find the table laden with chicken, duck, pork, and fish. All of a sudden, they remembered that the old monk was vegetarian. They were extremely upset over their mistake and did not know what to do. But the old monk acted like there was nothing unusual, and picking up his chopsticks, invited everyone to sit down to dinner. The three friends were greatly moved. Did the old monk break the precepts? No. His behavior followed what is said in the sutras. Compassion and kindness are the basis of Buddhism, and skillful means are the method. He had used the first of the four beneficial methods, making others happy. The old monk was moved by their gesture and did not blame them for their honest mistake. He had used the same method that the bodhisattvas use to help people through the Dharma doors. If the monk had been angry, he could have easily ruined their interest in Buddhism. But he was wise enough to use the opportunity to help guide three people. Therefore, we again see that Mahayana Buddhism is highly flexible as it accords with the existing circumstances. Let's look at strictly abiding by the precepts. The five precepts are the heart, the essence of all the precepts. Expanding further, we follow all the precepts as set forth by Buddha Shakyamuni, as well as the social norms, customs, rules and laws in every country. When in China, we follow Chinese customs, rules, and laws. When in the United States, we follow United States customs, rules, and laws. In other words, precepts are rules we need to follow in our daily lives. The modern conveniences of transportation and communication have greatly increased opportunities for travel to different countries and regions of the world. We need to follow the advice of when in Rome, do as the Romans do. This is called strictly abiding by the precepts. Many of the precepts taught by Buddha Shakyamuni were appropriate for that time, but are no longer suitable for today. Why? Our manner of living, dressing, and eating are totally different from those of India several thousand years ago. For example, of the 250 precepts for monk, 10 rules on the etiquette of dressing are totally unsuitable for today, as ancient Indians dressed differently than we do. Eating is another area that has changed considerably. Therefore, when we study and recite the sutras on the precepts today, we are learning the spirit of the law and not just the letter. Likewise, when we practice adhering to the precepts, the most important point is to follow their fundamental spirit. Do nothing that is bad. Do everything that is good. To do nothing that is bad is directed towards us. This is a Theravada precept to develop self-discipline and is to be followed conscientiously. It is what the Chinese call attending to one's own moral well-being, even when alone. When we practice self-discipline, we need to remain true to the precepts, even when we are alone. To do all that is virtuous is for the benefit of others. This is a Bodhisattva precept in teaching us how to interact with all others. Precepts are the criteria for distinguishing between good and bad. Because of the differences in the political system, philosophy, and cultures, the precepts need to be modified when Buddhism was introduced into China. The rules established by Master Baizhang in the Tang Dynasty were the modified versions adopted for China at that time. However, the essence remained unchanged. This is similar to a state revising the laws from time to time. As new situations arise, it becomes necessary to amend some articles, but the principle remains the same. In China, Wei places in every province and region have their own version of the precepts. They need to mesh with local conditions for people to follow them. This is simply a modification. If it is not done, then Buddhism will not survive. Only through this updating and modification will it be vital and constantly renewed, allowing it to be accepted and practiced around the world. The Buddha told us that if we can abide by the precepts and laws, we will have a tranquil body and mind, which will allow us to be free from worries and fears. Deep concentration arises from tranquility. Therefore, the precepts are essential to self-cultivation. If we break the law or the precepts, then our conscience will be plagued by guilt, even if no punishment is meted out. Moreover, even if we avoid worldly retribution, there is no way to avoid karmic retribution. When our body and mind are disturbed, we cannot concentrate on our practice. To practice successfully, we need to be tranquil. It is said, precepts or self-discipline lead to deep concentration, from which wisdom arises. In summary, the second condition, including abiding by the precepts, is a Theravada act of merit and is the basis for practice. The seventh principle of behaving in a proper and dignified manner means we act appropriately for the circumstances we are in. We act from the heart of sincerity and respect for all beings, animate and inanimate, to accord with social etiquette. The third condition concerns the good fortune required to be a bodhisattva and includes generating the Bodhi mind, deeply believing in the law of cause and effect, reciting and upholding the Mahayana Sutras, and encouraging others on the path to enlightenment. The eighth principle is generating the Bodhi mind. Chinese Buddhists primarily practice Mahayana Buddhism and wish to develop the Bodhi mind, the awakened mind that is genuinely free from delusions. It is the awakened mind that realizes that this world is full of misery and suffering. It is the compassionate, the sincere mind, with every thought to attain realization for self and others. The Buddha told us that suffering exists throughout the world, throughout the six realms. Not only is the human life one of suffering, but the heavenly life as well. The sufferings of the human realm are so numerous that it would take hours to describe them. Simply said, they are the eight sufferings of birth, old age, sickness, death, hardships, the inability to have what we want, being parted from those we love, and finding ourselves in the presence of those whom we resent or even hate. A person who has been born into the form heaven is one who has accomplished deep concentration, as well as having severed the five desires for wealth, lust, fame, food or drink, and sleep. In this realm, there is no suffering arising from external circumstances, such as famine, storm, sickness, etc. But the beings here still suffer the inevitable consequences of time, deterioration or decay of the body, and finally, the realization that they will not remain in this heaven permanently. With a physical body, we are mortal. We are born, we live, we die.